especially those who are here, and hopefully those who might be on their way, that they will get here before we progress too far. We are literally on the final part of the study, and also on the final verse. And for those who might be joining us for the first time, we have, over the past 7-8 months, been looking on what the Bible teaches, and especially the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1 through 16, on the subject of head covering. That is, that in approaching God, the men must not cover their head and in prayer, and the women are to. So we have spent some 7-8 months on the subject, and we are on the last verse. Brother Bramley had a point he was making last week, and I'm going to give Brother Bramley about 7 minutes, hopefully, and if that is too much, that's okay. But hopefully, you can make your point, Brother Bramley. Try to get to the point and your necessary passage. I would hope, too, that somebody would get Brother Bramley the mic, that Okay, let me start to say a few, start to make sure we understand. We remind you that there is no contention over what the text teaches. So up front, it's important that everyone get this, that Brother Bramley believes what the passage teaches from verse 2 right back to verse 16. We are in sort of total agreement. So it's not that Brother Bramley have some view about different from what we have been emphasizing here on what the Bible teaches, and the fact that in prayer and teaching, preaching, men may not cover their head. The Bible gives a reason, and women are to cover, especially if you are a child of God. Now, Brother Bramley believes that, so don't misunderstand anything. Now, the point that there might be a little disagreement, and that would not change the substance of the passage. Brother Bramley believes that where it says we have no such custom, that the custom referred to there, I'm just want to make sure you understand, the no custom. Brother Bramley is saying This refers to the
T-I-O-N,
yes. Now, that the no custom or practice refers to the contention. That is what Brother Bramley is saying. When Paul says we have no such custom, Brother Bramley believed it was saying we have no such custom of making contention over the matter. So the custom refer not to the practice that Paul has been dealing with from verse 2 to verse 15. The no custom or no practice is not referring to what he has outlined there, and that there are people who are contending against that. For Brother Bramley, it is referring to the contentious member, the contention. So, Brother Bramley, take up now, and as I've said, you have 7 minutes.
Thank you, Brother Mitchell. You are correct in your summation of what you have just said concerning my understanding of verse 16. Having outlined his argument, given some 8 reasons for the subject matter under consideration, and the authority for which he spoke concerning this doctrine based on the principle of headship, there were some, the church in Corinth, we know from earlier studies that they were a divisive church, fractious church. And so the contentions, I believe that is being spoken of here, it was saying that we, the apostles, we have no such custom, we have no practice of being contentious, because he has already declared his authority from which he spoke. Let me go back to the beginning of the epistle, to see if we can substantiate what I have just said. If you go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 10, the Apostle Paul, in looking at divisiveness, he says, "Now I plead with you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you may be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment." Now, the Apostle Paul, prior to his arrival at Corinth, evidently he got questions concerning a number of issues. It was one of the first things that he identified, a divisiveness among brethren. He goes on to, in verse 11, "For it has been declared to me concerning you, my brethren, by those of Chloe's household, that there are contentions among you." No, this is the same word in English and in Greek that is used, same root word that is used in verse 16 of 1 Corinthians chapter 11. So there is no doubt that there were brethren in the church at Corinth who were generally of a divisive or a quarrelsome. This is what this word is really, really means. It's of a quarrelsome nature. And the Apostle Paul is saying, look, We don't have any such custom. We don't have any practice of being quarrelsome. In fact, if we were to look further on this principle that is taught by himself elsewhere in the New Testament, if we were to look at 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 4, this same root word is used. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. In trying to, before I get to chapter 6, in looking at the word, in the verse 2 verses of chapter 6, Paul was encouraging the brethren to honor their masters, those masters who were of the Christian faith and who were not. But he was saying, look, give honor to them. Then he goes on now to say in verses 3 and 4, I'm going to look precisely at verse 4. He says, if anyone teaches otherwise, what teaching, what he had talked about in giving honor to those masters, whether they were of the faith or not. If anyone teaches otherwise and does not consent to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, here's the authority again, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, not knowing, but is obsessed with disputes. Mm-hmm. Now, this is what the Apostle Paul is saying, that those who are obsessed with disputes and are quarrelsome and have arguments over words, right? He is saying that, look, we don't have that sort of mentality. If we look in verse 20, he's saying, so he tells them what the results of all of that would bring, right? For the latter part of verse 4, envy and strife, violent, evil suspicions. He said in verse 20, O Timothy, guard what was committed to your trust, avoiding the profane and vain babblings and contradictions of what is falsely claimed knowledge. So, there is a spirit, there is a principle of God's preacher who ought not to be contentious, who ought not to be quarrelsome. Again, we see further when we were looking at the qualifications of a overseer or a bishop. Again, this is one of the attributes that we ought not to have. In 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 3, in looking at the qualifications of the bishop or the overseer or the elder, he says in verse 3, not given to wine, nor violent, nor greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome. Again, that term, not quarrelsome, is coming from that same root word, meaning not to be contentious, not to be quarrelsome, not to be divisive and fractious. Again, the principle is also highlighted again in looking at the same qualifications of the elder. And in looking at Titus chapter 3 and verse 9, again, the same principle of being in control of oneself. It says, but avoid foolish disputes, genealogies, contentions. So, if you're going to be a leader of God's word, whatever seems to be in dispute, then the man of God ought not to be contentious. He ought not to be quarrelsome. The principle that is right throughout the scriptures as it concerns our leaders, and I would dare say, if we are going to be ambassadors of Jesus Christ, so should we also not be quarrelsome. So, yes, verse 16 is not to introduce anything new or to bring about a new dispute. We are of on the same mind as it concerns this doctrine of women covering, men not covering, based on the principle of headship. And he was saying, look, I have outlined the authority from which I speak. Again, that authority we have seen earlier on in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and elsewhere. We have seen similarity of mind elsewhere in the scriptures, several other places in the scriptures, in Philippians, in Ephesians. And what he's saying here is that, look, we don't have any such custom of being quarrelsome, nor do the churches of God. And so, you know, we should be of one mind.
Okay, thank you, Brother Bramley. One, that a particular word, any word, might be used in 5, 6, 7, 8 passages doesn't mean that each of the passage is addressing the same thing. Very important, as I've stated here, and it's not a rule I set, it's a rule of hermeneutics, that it is a context that determines what meaning a word has. You mentioned a while ago, and you're right, about if, and you brought up a text, if those who aspire to be church leaders must not be contentious. On the other hand, we are commanded to contend for the faith once delivered. And that is where you have to challenge person and get in discussion, not quarrel.
That's right.
But get in discussion, as we have seen Christ on many occasions, Paul. Mm-hmm. So that the word contentious, quarrelsome, whatever, is used. Sometimes we have to be careful of the connection we make. Not only that, the passage of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, 2 or 3 through 16, the subject matter is not contention.
Agreed.
That's the subject matter is head covering. Now, what I'm going to do, Brother Bramley, is approach my point and really correcting, and you're going to see at the end of it that I think your view there is contrary to the passage. I'm going to approach it from two standpoints. I'm going to approach it from the language of the text. And I'm going to approach it from the theological commentary. I'm going to have probably 3, 4, 5 different translations of the passage, authentic translation, and at least most of them. And what we're going to do is listen to some scholars, commentators, who are going to pick up the phrase and tell us what it means. And one or two or three of these commentators are members of the church of Christ. So we are going to approach it from that standpoint. Okay, let us approach it from the translation standpoint. This is the 26th translation. Keep in mind, the men who translate the Bible, we have different translations. you have authentic translation. You have some of them are nothing more than commentary on the denominational doctrine of the translator. But you have authentic translation who do justice to the original language. So what we are going to do now is permit some of these objective translators to bring out what the text says. We have just a minute. I want to sometime the abbreviation of the translator. Okay, this one is I'm coming MOF. Okay, the New Testament translation, James Moffett, a Greek scholar. Hear how we translate that. Everybody listening? In bold, what these, this is what you call the 26th translation, that it will give you the King James, and it will give you 3, 4, 5, 6 other translation other than the King James. So, in the King James, we have no such custom. The Moffett translate that well. I acknowledge no other mode of worship. Everybody gets it? That is, no other mode of worship. Men worshiping a particular way and women worshiping. So notice the emphasis here is on the mode of worship. Then we have N-O-R. N-O-R is which one is that? N-O-R is the New Testament. The New Testament translation by Olet M. Norley. I can say that we have no such custom of women going bareheaded. Everybody gets it? So here again, the emphasis is on the woman's attire. Let me read that again. I can say that we have, remember, this person is translating what the Greek says. I can say that we have no such custom of women going bareheaded. That is the New Testament translation. One more, that is GSTD. Let me see. The New Testament, an American translation, Edgar G. Goodspeed. And he translated, for my part, that is Paul, you know, we have no such. For my part, recognize no other practice in worship than this. So here again, the emphasis is not on the contention, but on what he has been teaching from verse 3. Say, we have no other practice than this. Okay, so here I give you 3 translations of that. Good News for Modern Men. 1 Corinthians. But if anyone wants to argue about it, all I have to say is that neither we nor the churches of God have any other habit of worship. Everybody understand that? Here again, the emphasis is the habit of worship referring to the mode of attire. You see, it has nothing to do with the contention. The contention is not what is being addressed. So this is another. Let us go now to the Amplified. Okay, the Amplified. Verse 16. Now, if anyone is disposed to be argumentative and contentious about this, we hold to and recognize no other custom in worship than this, nor do the churches of God generally. Everybody gets that? Nobody gets it? Well, let me go over it again. Now, if anyone is disposed to be argumentative and contentious about this, we hold to and recognize no other custom in worship than this. This what? What I have outlined from verse 3 right down. Nor do the churches of God generally. That the we there referring to the apostle. But it's not only the apostle. Paul says, implying that wherever you find the true church, they do not practice any other practice other than women covered and men not covered. So here we have three different translations from that, the Amplified. This, that is five. Let us listen now to some commentary. Let me get the Church of Christ first. This is by David Lipscomb and Shepherd. Great Church of Christ scholars, as many of you know, David Lipscomb, think it's now a university, is named of Brother Lipscomb. Okay? So what we have just done is give the translators who, what they have done is tell you what the person who wrote in Greek, what their intention was, what came out in the language. And listen now, the commentators. Of course, this is, as I said, David Lipscomb. It's a two-volume commentary. This is on 1 Corinthians. The other volume is on 2 Corinthians. And I'm here at verse 16, and here he stated in English first, and then he's going to comment. But if any man seemeth to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. Listen now. The custom referred to must be women wearing short hair and approaching God in prayer with uncovered head. Is that plain? That's not plain. Let me read it again. But if any man seem there to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. Brother Lipscomb and Shepherd are now commenting on it. The custom referred to must be women wearing short hair and approaching God in prayer with uncovered head. That's the subject Paul has been dealing with from verse 2 or 3. And shepherd and leads come here is saying, when Paul talks about custom, that's what he's referring to. He continues. He reasoned on the subject to show the impropriety, but adds in an authoritative manner, if any are disposed to be contentious over it. Okay? So here again, this is one commentary.
Can you read that again, that latter part, please?
Okay, let me read it again. You have a mic? See it underlined, and it's verse 16.
But if any man seemeth to be contentious,
just the latter part, not his understanding of verse 16, but the final commentary about contentious.
He reasoned on the subject to show the impropriety that, but adds in an authoritative manner, if any are disposed to be contentious over it.
I don't get that to be saying. We're not here questioning Paul's authority. That has been clearly established. What I have not heard from the writer, and I've said this to Brother Cole in the past, that with all due respect to any preacher, be they from the church or from the denomination, it matters not to me how much reference, quotations that you can put forward. If it is not based on scripture or can show definitively that it is from the scripture, really it has much meaning.
We have read from 5 translations. That is not opinion, that is scholarship. The translator were telling us what the Greek was saying. And if you bring a dozen authentic translations, here are 5. This, I read, and I can read them again, 3 different translations.
Yes, I heard you.
Yes, but I don't know if you heard it, brother.
What I didn't hear from Brother Lisco.
Wait, listen. When? Okay. In bold, we have no such custom. Now, what the scholar is doing is giving you another way, the same expression in Greek can be brought out in English. And that is, well, I acknowledge no other mode of worship. That's one. Another translation. I can say that we have no such custom of women going barehead. Now, that would be in keeping, because that's exactly what the apostles have been discussing from verse 3 right down. And to say the contentious person would be the person who want to contend what Paul was teaching on the matter. And Paul was saying, you who want to take me up on it, to suggest the opposite, we don't have any practice like what you want to suggest. When you turn that around, I can say that we have no such custom of women going therein. Then the third translation here, good seed. I for my part is not the translator, you know, that's Paul. I for my part recognize no other practice in worship than this one. What I have been discussing with you all from, of course, Paul didn't write in verse. For our convenience, we say from verse 3, that's been no other practice. And remember, what we are doing here, let me just again. The custom referred to that is, Shepherd is taking up the word custom in the passage. And he's pointing, the custom referred to must be women wearing short hair and approaching God in prayer with uncovered head. Okay, just a minute here. Okay, another commentator. This is F.F. Bruce. F.F. Bruce is one of the great Greek scholars of England. Whenever I study any book in reference to the Bible, it matters not what the person's scholarship. When the comment is contrary to the plain teaching of the Bible, it will be rejected.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Now, so we are here looking, we have looked on five translations of the text. All of them is putting the emphasis that the custom referred to is women appearing before God uncovered. That's the custom. That's what the word custom. We have looked on one commentary by our people. Let us now look on F.F. Bruce. And what is important is that if the person is just a person who don't know anything, take it upon him herself to write something, you can have some give and take. If the person is a scholar and respect his her scholarship, then we are to listen to what the person says, unless it is plain that the person is going contrary to the Bible. Paul's fourth argument, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 16. Paul's fourth argument is an appeal to general Christian practice. That's what Paul called custom. This was his last word to anyone who was disposed to be contentious about this subject or to deny the validity of his previous argument. We're going to read further. So here again, which is in keeping with the text. The scholar here is seeing verse 16. Paul has in mind what he has previously discussed from verse 3 down to verse 15. That's what verse 16 is about. And here, F.F. Bruce is acknowledging that. Let me read that again. Paul's fourth argument is an appeal to general Christian practice. This was his last word to anyone, and anyone is in bold here because he's quoting that from the verse. To anyone who was disposed to be contentious about this subject or to deny the validity of his previous argument. We, that is Paul and his fellow apostles, that is the person to whom the we refer. We know that is so. We, that is Paul, and that is in close, open and close quotation, bracket rather. That is Paul and his fellow apostle, or Paul and his associate in the Gentile mission. If indeed we does mean I, as it often does in his letter. So here the author is giving you some other insight that we does not always refer to others. You know, we talk about the editorial we. Sometimes it refer with you. Even we today use the word we, referring just to the individual person. Okay. We, as often does in his letter, recognize no other practice than the one recommended in the preceding verses, nor do the churches of God. Is that plain? Not plain. Let me read it over. Paul's fourth argument is an appeal to the general Christian practice. And that is a fact. When he said, neither we nor the churches of God, what he's saying, the practice in the church is that women be covered. So, we, that is Paul and his fellow apostle, or Paul and his associate in the Gentile mission. If indeed we does not mean I, as it often does in Paul's letter, where sometimes we means I, we recognize no other practice than the one recommended in the preceding verses. Verse 15, verse 14, verse 13, verse 12, verse 11, verse 10, verse 9, verse 8, verse 7, verse 6, verse 5, verse 4, verse 3. That's the custom referred to this. That's right. That is recommended in the preceding verse. Nor does the churches of God, including possibly the church at Jerusalem and her daughter churches, as well as those planted by Paul and his colleagues. Here he's telling you, when Paul referred to the churches of God, F.F. Bruce felt it include the church at Jerusalem and other congregation that the church at Jerusalem got started, and other congregation that Paul and his associate got started. All those were included, and the custom here is referring to that which is contrary to what these congregation practice. It's not referring to the contention. So far, we have not one translation. We have looked at five versions of how that verse is translated. So none so far, Brother Bramley, gives support to what you are saying. And this is the second
Just a minor correction to that commentary.
Uh-huh.
That we that is referred to in verse 16,
uh-huh,
it's referring to the apostle and his aides that he had there, and specifically Sosthenes.
May I, brother?
Wait.
There are many places.
Yes, I hear you.
Wait.
I know. I heard you. What you said, you know.
Yes, but remember, I don't want us to go.
I don't want to go down that road. Yes. Just to point out.
Wait.
Yes.
What I'm saying, the author has already pointed out. He gave about three possible options as to whom the we may refer to.
I heard you.
It can refer to Paul alone because.
Yes.
In many of his writing and letters, we refer to just him.
I understand you.
We can refer to some other congregation with Jerusalem and that Jerusalem got started. And we can also refer to congregation that Paul and his associate got started. Of course, that is not the meat of this discussion.
Yes, I know.
Okay? Let's not waste time on that.
I only just brought that out just to say to you, say to us all, that in the context here that we're talking about, that we, that was referring to, was Paul and Sosthenes. That was the we that was being mentioned. It would, yes, fall under one of those three categories. That's all I'm saying. And okay, that is substantiated in Acts chapter 18 and verse 17. That's okay, all I'm saying. But not to deviate too much from the meat of the discussion.
Well, it doesn't. And the author has already given us about three options in which we can be used referring to Paul. Even when Paul wrote and had company with him. You see, if it's a case it was important, I could come back here another Wednesday night showing how the we is used referring to Paul even when he had company with him. So let's not go there.
We need not go there. 15, that's not
verse
the issue.
15 from, and this book deals with the head covering. And may I? Let me see. I think this person is a member of the Church of Christ. Yes, I think he is a member. Anyway, this comes, okay, but if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. Commentary now. This comes as Paul's final statement on the subject, intended to settle the matter conclusively. Nearly all commentators agree that Paul is appealing to the practice of all the churches of God, saying that they all practice the same thing. And that is a fact. The text bears that out. That is, they require women to pray or prophesy with heads covered, and men to pray or prophesy with heads uncovered. This means that the phrase, "we have no such custom," KJV, King James Version, this means that the phrase, "we have no such custom," means we have no custom of allowing women to pray with heads uncovered. Is that plain? That's not plain. What I find striking is that the translation, that is what the original Greek was giving off, what the idea, the meaning in it. I could have brought more translation, but didn't want to, because this is fine. All of them acknowledge that the no contention is referring to person wanting to go against the teaching from verse 3 to verse 15. Now, here we have no such custom allowing women to pray with heads uncovered. We could say that the phrase means we have no custom such as that of the contentious person. Everybody get that one? We have no such custom of that of the contentious person. But the no such custom cannot be referring to the contention it must be referring to the fact that what the contentious person is recommending, which is opposite that of what Paul is teaching, Paul is saying, what you are recommending, we have no such custom. A few minutes we have to. This is from Barnes' note. Barnes is one of the old commentary of commentators of the Bible. Let us hear what Barnes says on the subject. Verse, if he says, yeah. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 16, he takes up the phrase again. Barnes. This is volume 5. It's about quite a lot of volume in this commentary. Okay? We have no such custom. Quotation. Commentary now. We, the apostles, in the churches which we have elsewhere formed, we have no such custom in Judea. The sense is that it is contrary to the custom there for women to appear in public unveiled. So there again, the custom referred to is women appearing in worship without being covered. The custom, the apostle argued, ought to be allowed to have some influence on the church of Corinth. It is customary for the women there to appear veiled. If at Corinth this custom is not observed, it will be a departure from what has elsewhere been regarded as proper. That is not understood. Is that understood? Okay, let me take one of these big commentaries. Since it's big, it may say more. Okay, this is the Wycliffe commentary. 1 Corinthians 11. Okay? No such custom. No custom this is a commentary, you know, that denominational commentary, but this is a commentary which points out the words "or here is given her for a covering" do not mean that the woman's hair is her covering and that she need no other veil. A view vitiating the force of 11:2-14. The word "for" is to be rendered "answering to." Anyway, no such custom. That is, no custom of women worshipping without covering. Some say that the custom was peculiar to Corinth. But Paul's word, "neither the churches of God," argue against this view. That isn't plain. Is that plain? So this man just get right to it. I mean, in fact, I don't find any of the translator or the commentator wondering whether it was referring to the contention are not. No, they know that the original language and the context could not be referring to the contention. So this man, no such custom. No custom of women worshipping without covering. Okay? I want to read more, but just one more. And this is the pulpit commentary. Most people are well acquainted with the pulpit commentary. About 20 odd books, many of them bigger than this. This is on 1st and 2nd Corinthians. Just give me a few minutes if I can to find Corinthians. Okay? I find it quick. Thank God. But if any man seem to be contentious, he's commenting now. He quotes from the Bible. Now he's commenting. St. Paul cuts the question short. That means Paul going to get right to it. As though impatient of any further discussion of the subject already settled by instinctive decorum and by the common sense of universal sense. That is what he's saying here. All the argument Paul presents from verse 3 right down, Paul felt like he has settled the matter and is getting now directly to it. St. Paul cuts the question short as though impatient of any further discussion of the subject already settled by instinctive decorum and by the common sense of universal usage. No such custom. Listener. If Brother Webb wasn't so far, but he's about a mile away, I would ask him to read this. No custom. Not referring to contentiousness, but to the women appearing with uncovered head. Nobody didn't hear that, Carl Mitchell. No custom. Not referring to contentiousness. The no custom is not talking about the contentiousness. What is it talk about, sir? But to women appearing with uncovered head. Why? Because that is the subject Paul has been dealing with. And the contentious person want to take up Paul, a rather inspired writer on that. So Paul was in effect saying, when you word it negatively, in effect, what you suggest, we have no such custom like that. When you word it positively, is that the only custom we know is that women worship with their head covered and men uncovered. Did I give you everything? I think so. Say that, brother. I think so too. May I? Just a minute. But Paul has no intention of arguing the matter with anyone who gives. Okay, this, I didn't read this, and since I have it here, this is 1 Corinthians, an introduction and commentary by Leon Morris. I'm going to let you comment, make you, because we, yeah. Verse 16, Paul has no intention of arguing the matter with anyone who is given to wordy battles, contentious, etc. And he gives the Greek word here. This person is one who loves strife. Such are capable of prolonging an argument indefinitely. In the face of such attitude, Paul points to universal custom. We have no such custom. That is, such as women praying or prophesying with head and covered. That's what the no such custom refer to. We don't have a custom of women praying or prophesying with their head uncovered. Yes, brother.
That is the argument, even sometimes within the church, that the custom here being referred to was some cultural practice, and that has somehow ceased.
Yeah, okay.
What I was trying to point out, and is in no way in contradiction to what we have been saying, is that Paul, having outlined all his arguments, and have prior to his arguments established his authority on the subject matter, in summation, they were persons who would have been quarrelsome, to use of a better term. He's saying, look here, I am not going to be quarreling with you, because I speak from a point of authority which has been taught to me by Jesus Christ himself. I indicated last week that the difficulty that I perceive and I understand for other brethren and for persons outside the church is that they are using this word custom and traditions interchangeably.
Okay,
you
brother,
cannot
brother Bradley,
in this context.
As you know, we have studied that.
Yes.
Custom means practice.
Yes, I know.
We're not going to go down that road.
To go
now. Custom means practice. What we have been looking on tonight is that I have not yet found any commentator or translation that attach the word custom to the contention. Every translation, every commentator see the custom as that which the contrary person who wants to argue with Paul. Paul is saying to that person, what you are suggesting to override what I am teaching, we do not have any such practice in respect to what you are suggesting.
That is
turn
clear.
That around.
That's clearly understood, brother.
Yes, turn that what? Around. The only practice we have in all the congregation of the Lord's church is what I have taught you and what I am discussing here, Corinthians from verse 3 down to verse 16. And many of the translations word it like that. The only practice we have is the one that I am teaching you now. So
that is without question.
Yes,
because he had taught that not only the Corinthian church, but all the other churches.
Church.
That's clearly established in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, and I believe 4.
When we attach the word custom, time, to the contention, we are doing injustice to the text. Because the word custom, our practice, our usage, is not talking about the contention. That's not what it is qualifying or addressing. it is addressing women appearing not covered.
I just leave you with this, brother. That word that is used, that word custom.
Brother Bramley, we have already pointed out the word custom means practice or usage. We have pointed that out about a dozen times.
Yes.
If and, the word custom, and I'm talking about what the Greek means, it means practice or usage. Practice or usage. The word custom. Practice or usage. Practice our usage.
And we have also seen
what the word means.
And we have also seen, brother, as you have pointed out from the scriptures, not to argue with it, just to say plainly, you have clearly pointed out to us that there are man-made customs and there are divine customs.
Usually the context will tell you which is under consideration.
And in this case, all I'm simply saying, brother, is that the word custom from the Greek translated is sunesia, completely different from chapter 2.
We have already discussed what the meaning of the word is. We have spent one whole class period showing in passages that the context will tell you rather, just like the word tradition. It is the context that's going to tell you rather it's divine tradition or man-made tradition. You know, so as I've said, the word custom in the passage, and that's what we must keep in mind, mean practice or usage. We